You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
With the announcement of how the government is planning to spend money over the next year comes the question of how this will impact the National Party's chances of being re-elected into power in next year's general election. When presenting her work to Parliament, Finance Minister Nicola Willis said that every Kiwi knows this government has their back. However, elements of the budget have been criticised by opposition parties and various activist groups, with opposition leader Chris Hipkins calling funding decisions in the budget strange and unnecessary. The budget can play a major role in whether a government will be re-elected or not. Labour's 1958 budget, for example, which has since become known as the Black Budget, resulted in the Finance Minister at the time, Arnold Nordmeyer, imposing additional taxes on cars, alcohol and tobacco in an attempt to limit the need for international goods during the payments crisis in late 1957. This caused political tensions, and as a result, Labour lost the 1960 general election after just one term. I spoke to Brian Roper, an associate professor in politics at the University of Otago, about how Budget 2025 will impact Nationals' chances to be re-elected and his opinion on what party or parties will make up the next government. To start, how important is the budget for a government's re-election into power?
The budget is really important in relation to a government's prospects for being re-elected. It's also the place that people should look to get a real sense of what the government is doing in terms of economic management and policy making across all of the broad areas of government.
Do you think the average New Zealander is fully in tune with the budget announcement? And do you think that sort of shapes their opinion heading forward?
No, I think that, you know, the reality is that the public is poorly informed with respect to key information in the budget. And in particular, you know, there's actually no requirement on government to provide accurate information that factors in inflation, economic growth and population growth. In other words, there's nominal figures, which are the dollar figures, not taking those things into account, not taking inflation into account. And so you'll often get political journalists and political commentators who will just uncritically relay to the public the government's own figures about nominal spending increases in different areas. But even if you've only got 2% inflation, if you're talking about a major spending area like health, where, you know, the total spend is just over $29 billion, that means that in nominal terms, if you're looking, I'm just looking here at, say, 2025 to 2026, the government needs to, in effect, be increasing nominal spending by $588 million just in that one year. So you've always got to take inflation into account to look at whether the government is actually increasing funding in a particular area or is actually cutting it in real terms.
What are some major differences with this week's budget announcement compared to what we saw in the 2024 budget?
I think what we've seen is quite a remarkable degree of continuity. So, anticipating criticism, Nicola Willis has claimed that this is a no BS budget, they were her words, and also that it's not an austerity budget. But the most important place to look to really see what's going on in terms of the government finances are what are called the core Crown expense tables. Now, I know that sounds deeply boring, but actually it's really interesting if you actually have a look at the figures there. So, for example, if you want to know what Treasury's forecast is with respect to government funding of tertiary education, you can actually go there and you can see the amount of money that the government is planning to spend on tertiary education each year out to the end of the forecast period, which is 2029. Now, to cut a long story short, if you do that, what you'll see is that during the forecast period out to 2029, this government is planning on cutting social spending in most areas, including health and education, over that forecast period. Now, in view of that, it is most definitely an austerity budget, and to claim otherwise is bullshit.
Would you say global tensions such as Trump's tariffs have had an impact on the shaping of the 2025 budget?
Well, you look at the 2025 budget and you have $12.8 billion of, quote, fiscal headroom, unquote, being created by the government so tightly restricting the grounds on which workers can apply, can successfully pursue a pay equity claim. So there's that going on the one hand. We also have chronic underfunding of health, housing, education, welfare relative to need, and also factoring in things like the low levels of government student support for tertiary students in New Zealand compared to the rest of the OECD, and the fact that we have comparatively high tuition fees for our domestic students and extraordinarily high tuition fees for our international students. So we're seeing a kind of a continuation of that. But at the same time, that the government doesn't have enough money to adequately fund our schools, universities, hospitals, public housing, and child poverty reduction and climate change responses. It's got $10 billion to spend on beefing up the New Zealand military, which, contrary to what many other commentators have been saying is necessary, I don't think is necessary at all, and I think it's actually much less important than providing more adequate government funding in those areas that I've just mentioned.
And how much of a legacy will this budget have in Aotearoa's history heading forward?
Well, I think that this government overall, it's very much a return to the fundamentalist neoliberalism of the 1990s Fourth National Government, you know, when during its first term, Ruth Richardson was Minister of Finance and Bulger was Prime Minister. So I think what we're going to see is just a continuation of cumulative underfunding of really important areas of social spending. So I think that's going on. But actually, there's another interesting question, which you sort of started off with, which was, what's Budget 2025 likely to do for the re-election prospects for National in 2026? And, you know, I've got some thoughts about that. In particular, if you do a compare and contrast of the previous National government, that is, you know, the key English Fifth National government, and if you look at how National and John Key were polling at the time of the previous National government's second budget, National was polling around 50%, you know, a bit above, a bit below, depending on which poll you look at. And John Key was polling around 45%. Now, you compare that to the National Party today. At the timing of this government's second budget, Christopher Luxon can't get over 25% support as preferred Prime Minister, and National is polling under 35%. There's nothing in this government, in this budget, which I think is going to enhance the re-election prospects of National and its coalition partners in this current government. So, you know, it's definitely not going to aid their prospects for re-election, and I'd be very surprised to see if there's an uptick in the coming polls for National as a result of this budget.
Speaking more to that, if we were to see the National Party change leadership, you said just then that Christopher Luxon is at 25% popularity? If we were to
see... Just below, yeah.
Yeah, just below. Could this change much if National had different leadership in this current government?
National government caucuses always tend to have, you know, over-representations and under-representations of certain categories of people. The current National caucus is 89.7% of their MPs have backgrounds from business, farming, law, accountancy, and the high professions. It is 68% male, and it has the most over-representation of Pākehā and underrepresentation of ethnic minorities, including Māori, of any of the parties in the New Zealand Parliament at the moment. So who are they going to select as a leader? Is it going to be a rich white man in a suit, another one, to succeed Christopher Luxon? Or is it going to be Nicola Willis? I mean, and if you look at, for example, you know, the budget speech, just look at the rows of who's actually sitting behind Nicola Willis. And what sort of talent have they got? You know, Nicola Willis seems an obvious candidate, as does Chris Bishop. Who knows? They could be more effective political leaders than Luxon, but they don't have a John Key and they don't have a Jacinda Ardern, both of whom were easily the most popular prime ministers of New Zealand's recent political history. They just simply don't have a politician that I can see anyhow that has anything like the kind of charismatic appeal of either Key or Ardern.
And I guess this is maybe a little bit too early to say, but with the next government, if Labour does win, could Labour potentially form their own government, or do you believe this could be like this would have to be a coalition government with what we're sort of currently seeing about how people are viewing Labour and the opposition parties?
Very good question. A couple of quick points on that one. Firstly, Chris Hipkins is on the right of the Labour caucus. He's very much a Keir Starmer, Tony Blair kind of essentially right-wing third-way social democrat in terms of his politics. So he really thinks that, you know, Labour's path to victory in the 2026 election is really going to be making Labour national light. Now, the problem that he has there, of course, is that Labour is going to most likely need a coalition partner or partners, in particular, the Greens. But the Greens are well to the left of Labour at the moment, and you can see that in their alternative budget, which is, you know, classic left social democratic policies. Hipkins is not really going to want to go into coalition with the Greens, and that's a real problem for Labour because he's also antagonised and alienated NZ First. And actually, politically, Hipkins would rather go into coalition with NZ First than with the Greens because he's a national Labour leader. He's a Keir Starmer kind of Labour leader. Like, he thinks the path to victory is to make Labour only very slightly to the left of National. Basically, to present Labour as a responsible, effective governing party. This is very much a budget for a relatively small minority of New Zealanders who are residential property investors who benefited from the $2.9 billion worth of tax breaks for residential property investors in budget 2024. If you look at the tax changes, these benefit corporations, they benefit the rich, they benefit those on high incomes. There's very little in this budget for the majority of New Zealanders who are on low and middle incomes, and there's nothing in this budget for tertiary education and tertiary education students who are looking at having a 12% increase in their tuition fees over the first 2 years that this government has been in power because of its continuation of government underfunding of tertiary education. So I think actually there's going to be a lot of resistance, and I think there's going to be a lot of pushback, and I think that National's going to have to work very hard and rely on large amounts of corporate donations for its 2026 election campaign to have much hope of being re-elected.
That was the University of Otago's Brian Roper on Budget 2025, how this will impact the National Party's chances of being re-elected, and who he believes the next government will be.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.